Hey everybody, welcome to Bean to Barstool, a podcast where we look at the intersections of craft beer and craft chocolate. My name is David Nilsson. I'm a full-time beer writer and an advanced Cicerone and the host of Bean to Barstool. In between our upcoming full-length episodes, beginning today, we're going to do some quick bonus episodes looking at the basics of beer ingredients and the brewing process. A lot of this is taken from an episode I released last spring, so you can listen to the whole thing if you want to. I believe it's episode 61, but we're going to break these up into shorter segments. And today, we're going to start out by talking about malt. Malt is a grain, usually barley, but sometimes wheat, rye, oats, or something else, that has been prepared for brewing. I'll explain what that means in just a moment. Malt provides all or almost all of the fermentable sugars for any given beer. It's almost always solely responsible for the color of a beer, and it provides the protein matrix that creates that attractive collar of foam on the top of a fresh pint. It's also what gives a beer an enjoyable texture or mouthfeel and has a significant influence on a beer's flavor and aroma, in some cases providing almost all of the flavor and aroma in a given beer. Simply put, malt influences every single sensory aspect of a beer: appearance, texture, smell, taste, and the love child of smell and taste, flavor. So what does it mean that barley has been malted? It begins with natural processes in a grain of barley that are accelerated by the maltster, the person who turns barley and other grains into malt, and concludes with a variety of ways the maltster then halts those processes. To understand malting, we have to talk about enzymes. When I start to talk about enzymes during a beer event, I can sometimes see attendees begin to check out a bit, because even the word enzyme sounds hopelessly complex and scientifically abstract. In reality, the basic function of any individual enzyme isn't that hard to understand. Enzymes are intricately folded three-dimensional protein molecules that facilitate biochemical processes within an organism. Because of their dynamic role in living processes, it can be easy to think of them as microorganisms themselves, but they aren't alive. They just exist as part of larger organisms. Each enzyme generally performs a single task on a single material or substrate, and is helpfully named after the substrate it works on. Proteases work on proteins, and cellulases on cellulose, for example. As I mentioned, enzymes are protein molecules folded into specific three-dimensional shapes. That shape allows them to interact with and modify the structure of another substance at the molecular level, but prevents them from interacting with molecules of a different shape. You can think of each type of enzyme as a three-dimensional key that will fit a specific lock but won't fit another. Every living organism has a large variety of enzymes that allow basic cellular and biochemical processes to occur. In barley and other grains, some of those enzymes perform roles that allow an individual grain, or seed, to produce a new plant. Plants produce energy through photosynthesis, which requires sunlight. When a seed begins growing under the soil, however, it doesn't have access to sunlight, so it needs a reserve of energy to fuel the plant until it can break through the soil. Most of the bulk of a kernel of grain is comprised of carbohydrates that provide that fuel. The seed will ultimately need those in the form of simple sugars in order to use them, but sugars aren't a great long-term storage solution for a variety of reasons, so that fuel is locked up in a complex starch matrix held inside small pockets within the grain's endosperm. It's a stable storage system that can wait for months or even years for the right conditions, and once the right temperature and moisture conditions are met, enzymes are the keys that unlock that storage system. Plant hormones within the grain stimulate the production and release of enzymes that will turn that starch reserve into usable fuel. Hemicelluloses and beta-glucanases break down the dividing membranes, proteases convert proteins into peptides and free amino acids, and amylases and dextrinases begin turning starch into sugar. When it comes to producing malt for brewing beer or certain spirits, a maltster manipulates those temperature and moisture conditions to stimulate the development of those enzymes, because we'll need them for the brewing process. Proteins need to be reduced, starch reserves need to be exposed, and ultimately, starch needs to be converted into simple sugars like maltose in order to be fermented by brewing yeast. After a few days under the right hydration and temperature conditions, the grain's internal structure has been sufficiently modified to allow it to be brewed with, and at this point, the maltster wants to halt the process, because otherwise the grain will do what it was supposed to do and grow a new barley plant. We don't want a new barley plant, though. We want beer. So the maltster halts the modification process by drying the malt out before all the starch is converted into sugar, so the brewer can finish that conversion during the brewing process. In order to brew, you need malt, and in order to make malt, you have to trick grain into trying to grow a new plant. We'll talk about how malt gets used in the brewing process in just a moment, but first, let's talk about some of the different types of malt. Base malts are the workhorse malts that provide the foundation for almost all beer styles, are dried at relatively low heat in kilns, and retain their usable starches and enzymes needed to convert those starches fully into sugars. The temperatures and times used to do this will lead to variations in these base malts. Different base malts can have flavors of flour, bread dough, bread, crackers, cookies, toast, bread crust, nuts, or others. Roasted malts are roasted in a rotating drum roaster in much the same way coffee beans or cacao beans are roasted, and they take on many of the same flavors found in those foods, as well as burnt caramel, char, and others. The rotating drum allows for high temperature to be applied without burning the malt, leading to dark colors and often intensely roasty flavors. The malt's enzymes are destroyed during this process, and its sugars are rendered mostly or entirely unfermentable, so this range of malts can only be used as a relatively small percentage of a beer's grain bill. Another group of malts are known as caramel or crystal malts. In these malts, the starch-to-sugar conversion that would normally take place during the first stage of the brewing process is completed inside the grain of barley, and the malt is then either roasted or kilned, crystallizing and caramelizing those resulting sugars. This leads to flavors of caramel, candy, dried fruit, toffee, and others. Additionally, malts can sometimes be dried out in unique ways, such as over wood smoke or in the open air without the application of heat. In both cases, this will have an impact on the flavors of the finished malt. Once the malts have been dried out using one of these means, they are shelf-stable potentially for years, waiting for a brewer to complete the cereal grain's transformation into beer. Within all of these types of malt, there are many variations and gradations, giving brewers a lot of options for building beer recipes. As I mentioned earlier, barley has characteristics that make it favorable for brewing, but other grains can be used as well. Each will contribute its own unique characteristics to a beer, but most are only used as part of a beer's recipe. Even in the case of beer styles named for grains, like wheat, rye, or oats, those titular grains make up only a percentage of the overall grist. The rest is usually barley malt. If any chocolate lovers listening want to get a taste of brewer's malt in a familiar context, try chocolate bars such as French Broad Malted Milk, Om Nom Black and Burnt Barley, or Indulgence Porter or IPA, all of which are made with malt. So that's a quick look at malt and what it does in the brewing process. If you have any questions, please reach out. I will do my best to answer those. You can check out our entire catalog of episodes at beantobarstool.com or on your favorite podcast platform. I hope you enjoyed this quick bonus episode of Bean to Barstool.